Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I finished fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win!
The Main Event Challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Well, 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 boys. Sorry for the wolf tickets. This is not John Anik and Kenny Florian, but this is the Anik and Florian Podcast. Here with an emergency edition Friday night. Guys, it's been a hell of a 48 hours. Yesterday, big drama show at the press conference, gets called off, fights with Laura behind the scenes. We've yet to see video from it. I know everybody's grinding for that. We show up this morning at the early morning weigh-ins, you know, expect to be hunky-dory. Everyone's going to come and make weight. Wrong. UFC 279, UFC 279 catchweight is what they should call it. Mm-hmm. I believe there were about eight bouts that ended up being a catchweight, but the final three got scrapped. Hamzat Chimaev came in 7.5 pounds over from Nate Diaz, who weighed in an hour before. No real attempt to come in and adjust that weight. So the UFC went down to the drawing board. They re-scrapped the whole card. We ended up with a little bit of a moving, musical chairs here at last three fights. So fellas, I just kind of want to get your takes here after what has been a whirlwind 48 hours. BP, we'll start with you. What is your thoughts here as a fan sitting at home?
We got a better card, boys. I'll say it. We got a better card. I like all the matchups they switched together. UFC comes through again. I know this card wasn't have a lot of meat on the bones. Everyone was coming for Chimaev and the Diaz. But give me Nate Diaz, Tony Ferguson all day. Give me Holland and Chimaev, especially since they got in a fight in the back, reportedly. We haven't seen the video yet. And obviously the Leach versus D-Rod is going to be an absolute fucking banger. So the UFC done well for us. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. I mean, this is what you know, I can't imagine what our host, our compadre, John Anik, going through, Dana White, all the people that are actually working about this. But as a fan, I am jacked to the tits for this one, boys.
Yeah, no, listen, I think this is why the UFC and other promotions have kind of moved to this type of format. What do? Well, if the shit hits the fan, you get someone else or a couple other guys that could fill in and be kind of pushed around. This new format is why this card has benefited. You know, I think all things considered, it sucks that Hamzat and Nate Diaz aren't going to be able to go at it, I think, for the UFC or whatever. But I think they made the best out of it. And we got actually better matchups. Matchups that make more logical sense, right? So I think, as far as the matchmakers and the people involved, they were able to pull off what I thought was going to be really difficult to pull off. So very impressed that they were able to do it. I still think we get some great fights, very interesting fights as well, and can't wait to break it down with you guys. But a lot of craziness that happened too, guys. I mean, like, yesterday, you get the fight that happened, right? You get the fight with Kevin Holland and Chimaev that happened backstage. That obviously is happening now, which is cool. We get kind of a juicier fight there in some regards. But to me, what I'm seeing from Chimaev getting into it with Costa on fight week, getting into it with Kevin Holland, not making weight. I'm seeing a lack of discipline all the way around. I'm not saying that's the case with his training and how he prepares for fights, but at the same time, the emotional maturity, that matters. And in a fight of epic proportions, when you're going against someone like a Nate Diaz, who can, you know, flip the bird and get you off your game and get you to brawl with him. I don't know. I think, did Chimaev dodge a bullet or did Nate Diaz dodge a bullet? I'm still trying to figure it all out, but I think it's something to watch in regards to Chimaev and how he progresses in his career. But I don't know. Interesting stuff.
Well, and to your point, Ken Flo, I think the safety of setting up a card like this is something that the UFC has been doing as of recent. And discussion I was having online with one of the SiriusXM co-hosts was, in the past, the UFC would just scrap an event like this. Main event's off, like not worth the trouble, like whatever. But they can't do that with this new UFC deal or the ESPN deal. You can't be canceling dates, you know, ipso facto at this stage in the calendar. So the fights had to go on. The card had to happen. And I do agree. I think we did end up with, you know, the best case scenario. And I said yesterday on Remember the Show, you know, wouldn't it just be fantastic if the MMA gods somehow gave us Tony versus Nate? And what did we end up with? Tony versus Nate in the main event.
We all won. And vintage Tony, you see the, I guess he's going for blonde hair. It's more gold, but he's vintage Tony. He's out cuckoo, babe. He's ready. Came out with a baseball. I don't know what the baseball bit is, but he's rocking.
He loves baseball.
He's got an arm sleeve. He's got an arm sleeve. Like, you know, like, is it a copper fit? Does he have elbow problems? I don't know. Is he, you know, sponsored by him? But I love Tony Ferguson. I mean, I listen, they're getting paid tail end of their careers, respectively, for both of them. I love seeing them getting the bags. Main event, 5 rounds. Neither guys had cardio issues, regardless of short notice or whatever. And it's only, like Kenny mentioned offline, it's the only shame is we didn't get it earlier at 55 in their primes, because that would have been fucking bananas.
Exciting stuff, boys. Exciting stuff. And that's at the top of the card, but we're going to start at the first fight that was announced, the Li Jingliang versus Daniel Rodriguez fight. The Li Jingliang enters the cage fresh off of a July 16th win over the King of Kung Fu over here in Long Island. The Chinese-born fighter training out of Beijing enters this bout a spry 34 years of age, winner of 3 of his last 5. 19-7 career record, boasts 11 UFC wins since 2014. He'll look to get that figure to 12 as he enters the cage against Daniel Rodriguez. BP, I'm going to start with you. The Leech is plus 135 against his new opponent with D-Rod at a minus 155 clip. It's been moving since it got announced about 2 hours ago. But with this line, who you got?
Man, I love this fight. I love all the fights. Like I mentioned earlier, the Leech is a banger. The Leech will get in there and throw with anybody. He's got a great chin. Defense left to be desired, because he relies on his chin, but he does have power. I mean, this guy knocked out Ponzinibbio. He has one-touch power. But Daniel Rodriguez is smooth, man. I mentioned it when we broke it down earlier. He's technically good. He moves forward, puts a pace on you, and he can crack. And he has survived some stuff in the octagon. He dropped that decision loss to Dolby, which, really wasn't a decision loss, but he's been clipped in there. He's been rocked in there. He's been put down. He's got up and he's won fights. And that's something you want to see in a guy who's starting his career off 6-1 in the UFC. I like Rodriguez. I like him at this number. I wish I could live bet right now. I got to wait till tomorrow, but I want to catch him before he touches 200. 155 is a juicy price for me. I like him. I think he's a good parlay price as well. 155 is a really sweet spot for parlays, because then you can not inflate your price all that much. But I think he pieces up the Leech for like 3 rounds. I don't see a finish happening, because they're both solid dudes. But D-Rod's, I think, is a special guy right here, especially this matchup.
Well, and I would expect that over to be juiced a little bit, given these guys' track records. Both of them very durable, both very good fighters. Ken Flo, D-Rod from the streets of L.A. L.A. really, you know, making its stand on this card this weekend. From the streets, 35 years of age, 16-2 record, winner of his last 3 fights, including victories over Mike Perry and Kevin Lee. His 6 UFC wins have been impressive. Holds a Contender Series win from 2019. He looked to add a 4th straight to the belt here against Li Jingliang in this newly formed belt. Ken Flo, you're the legend here. How do you see this fight going?
Man, this is an interesting fight. I think that the Leech is going to be a little bit more technical. I think he's a little bit more mobile overall. He's going to be faster. But D-Rod, with that pressure, with that durability, and with that chin and his ability to just believe in himself and keep coming back, like BP was saying, And the fact that, again, we can't ignore this. Props to DeLeach, by the way, for taking this fight against a dude who's weighing in at, you know, 179, right? 179, 180.
Yeah, he weighed in a little under 180, yeah.
Yeah, so on fight night, you know, you got to imagine he's going to have maybe that – he's probably stay with that 9, 10-pound weight advantage. That matters. It matters when you're hitting something that's bigger than you, and it matters when you're getting hit by that larger thing as well. Mm-hmm. D-Rod can crack already. He doesn't need any help as far as the weight goes, but he's going to get it. And that, to me, is why I need to go with D-Rod. I think he gets it done. I'm not sure if he's going to get the finish here, but I think it's going to be an absolute banger on both sides. I wouldn't be surprised to see Leach kind of early on landing shots, you know, getting his speed going. But then D-Rod just kind of creeping in, getting in his face and kind of stealing the fight. Later on, as it goes in the second or third round.
Yeah.
Great minds thinking alike here, guys. You might want to take that over to the DraftKings Sportsbook. You can head on over to John's profile. Use that link in the bio. Download the app. Helps the show out greatly. Fellas, this co-main event is a fight that we didn't know we wanted until it happened backstage. And now all of a sudden we get it. So the MMA gods giving us a bit of a gift here. Boris Chimaev comes in after getting bumped down. He missed weight this morning. Didn't really seem all that upset about it, you know, kind of had this nonchalant attitude. BP and I were texting people on the ground where there was just a lot of disrespect. And so hopefully, as Ken Flo said, that's not something that bleeded into his training or bleeds into this fight coming up this weekend. Hamzat's 11-0 overall. Kevin Holland is 23-7 overall. At one point, I believe Kevin Holland had the record for the most fights in a calendar year, which was then taken over by Hamzat Chimaev. So a little bit of interesting flair there, which I could be incorrect about. I didn't do my whole research, my boys. But Hamzat Chimaev at this updated line.
You're right.
The updated line here is about half of what it was with the Diaz fight. So minus 580. He was, I believe, up to a minus 1,200 against Diaz. Kevin Holland plus 440 is a much closer fight against D-Rod. A lot of line movement here. Kenny, I'm going to start with you in the co-main so that you can go last in the main event challenge. Hamzat Chimaev minus 580. Kevin Holland plus 440. How do you see this fight going?
Yeah, this is interesting to me. You know, I do think that Kevin Holland is an interesting challenge in that, you know, here you have another guy, tall, lanky, you know, he's okay on the ground. You know, he's going to be feisty. He's going to be the guy who's talking shit to Hamzat, trying to get him off of his game. So I'm curious to see how Hamzat reacts to that. I think this is a great fight for Hamzat to build up into those bigger fights. Because there's Kevin Holland and then there's the Kevin Holland shit talk that you got to deal with. So you got like two opponents and seeing that Chimaev might be somewhat, I don't know, maybe easy to tick off a little bit. I'm just curious to see how he responds throughout this whole process. So, and again, with the backdrop of what happened last night, we have, you know, we get a much spicier fight here. So, Here's the thing, though. I think Hamzat is a nightmare matchup for someone like Kevin Holland. Why? Because he can wrestle, number one. I don't think Holland's jiu-jitsu is good enough or on the level of a Nate Diaz where Hamzat might be tentative or hesitant in taking him down. I don't think he's going to be scared of Kevin Holland. I just don't think Holland is good enough off of his back to be a submission threat against someone like Hamzat Chimaev. So the wrestling is a factor. The other thing that's a factor is Hamzat's ability to slip and rip and move forward and pressure guys and bring insane power. That to me is going to be troublesome for Kevin Holland because his only, in my opinion, the way I see it is for Kevin Holland to kind of deal with that pressure is to clinch with him. And that's only going to allow Hamzat to do what he does best, which is throw people on their heads. So it's a tough one for Kevin Holland. Holland's best bet is to catch him with some kind of a counter strike coming forward. I just don't see that happening enough. We saw Chimaev's chin on full display in his last fight against Gilbert Burns. I mean, Gilbert Burns threw that right hand. Was it a right hand or a left hand? That would have chopped most people's heads off. Chimaev was able to eat it and continue moving forward. He was definitely hurt, but it wasn't enough to knock him out. That to me shows that he's got toughness. He's got durability. He's got a chin to boot. I like Chimaev here. I think he gets a finish somewhere around the second or third round.
BP, over to you.
Yeah, I see this fight. It screams finish on either side. I think we can't count out Kevin Holland here. Yes, his wrestling is suspect. He's working with Johnny Hendricks. He's trying to get that down. He's looked pretty good at 170. This is a catchweight, obviously, they're both. But the one thing that is holding me back from going all in on Chimaev, I think Chimaev, when he gets Kevin to the ground, he's going to get him to the ground. I think when he takes your back, I think it's a problem. Kevin Holland's been submitted by Brendan Allen by rear naked choke. That's kind of Hamzat's move. He's strong in that position. Kevin Holland doesn't really try to get up. He plays the game on the ground. That's going to be not so great when he gets against Hamzat. But Kevin Holland, to take this fight, said, I want it at five rounds. I want five rounds. Kevin Holland taking a fight on relatively short notice against D-Rod got bumped to this. They got some beef. Chimaev missed weight, which throws a lot of question marks in. Why did he miss weight? He's known about this fight forever. We all dissect the little video of the Costa where there's a little bit of a limp. There might be a leg issue. So if Chimaev gets pushed to the fourth, fifth round, which we've never seen, that's going to be interesting. I mean, Kevin Holland isn't like the cardio machine that Nate Diaz or Tony Ferguson is, but he is a guy that Kenny mentioned that's going to get in your head. He's going to smack you. He's going to talk to you. And Chimaev has a short fuse. Yeah. So I'm screaming prop. I'm screaming Chimaev by submission or Kevin Holland with a stunner knockout. I think you can hedge your bets and play both ways. But for the sake of the show and the sake of the game, I'm picking Chimaev just because I think he's a little more well-rounded. And then Kevin Holland said at the press conference, at the weigh-ins, Joe Rogan's like, how do you think this matchup, is this a better matchup for you? And Kevin Holland said, fuck no, but let's go. Let's have fun. I love the honesty because he knows
right.
This dude's a beast. I was going against a striker. Now I'm going against a guy who's going to jump on my legs. But you got to love the fight. But I look at Kevin Holland at plus 440 by knockout, which I haven't released yet, is going to be even juicier. That might take some of my money as well. But interesting fight here, boys. Co-main event, five rounds. Let's go.
And Peach, yeah. You know, again, we're not exactly sure why Chimaev didn't right. make weight, but that could be indicative of some kind of an injury, right? I mean, So that kind of helps things a little bit more the way of Holland.
I think when Rogan asked him, I have to rewatch. I could be incorrect. I think he briefly said real quickly when we was getting shower booze that they made him quit cutting. They told him to stop. I think he said that in his English. I have to go back and rewatch. So maybe the commission stepped in and was like, you're nowhere near it. Maybe he started really high. I don't know. Apparently he let the Diaz camp know they were high. There's a lot of things that misinformation. I don't want to spread false rumors, but yeah, I mean, listen, he can be coming in hampered here. And his ego is very high right now. So I can go in without a leg and win. You know, that's what he's feeling right now. And you go against like Kevin Holland, who's going to snipe you from the outside. That could be dangerous. This is interesting. This is an interesting fight here. I know Chimaev is going to climb probably close to 800, but I'm going to keep an eye on that line for sure.
And with the weight cutting thing, Dana did say on the SportsCenter interview that they had sent somebody up and the doctor essentially was recommended that he stop cutting.
Okay. So he did say, okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of times, you know, the UFC is great. And a lot of promotions are good about it. When you come into fight week, they check your weight, right? So they know what the deal is throughout the week. They know how big of a cut or how little of a cut you're going to have to start that week or 2 weeks before that. So, you know, at least we know he's going to be healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, other bad health concerns are going to be avoided here.
Yeah. Well, and word on the internet too was that the UFC walked into the weigh-ins this morning knowing that this was a possibility. So it wasn't a complete blindside when, you know, the murmurs were going around this morning. So, you know, feasible to believe that sometime last night, you know, in the middle of the night that they started formulating this plan. So, a lot of interesting stuff there. And especially the point that you guys touched on, you know, the weight miss, it might be injury related. It might be discipline related. As we see, it hasn't been very disciplined this week. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors coming into that fight.
Did you see him tweet out that picture of someone photoshopped him and Darren really fat? And he goes, it's his fault. Like, cause Till looks all fat there. That's funny. He's like trying to lean into it, but then he goes on after the weigh-ins and just completely like doesn't lean into it. Just starts yelling at the crowd. It's a weird dynamic. And like Kenny touched on it and hit the nail on the head. He's an emotional short fuse kind of guy. And that, you know, that might not be so good. And we got to also remember he's a young fighter. This is his sixth fight, 11th fight overall. I mean, that's still pretty young in his career. So obviously emotions and lack of focus can really play a factor in some of these fights, especially high level ones.
And hey, maybe a calculated heel turn, you know, he was the darling coming into this, you know, giving him the you know, we can say it now, the cake matchup to go in there and look good so that the promotion could put you over and you pissed away all this goodwill. So when they're sitting there in the matchmaker meeting on Tuesday, like his name has a little red dot next to it now.
I got to imagine the UFC so pissed at him for this. I mean, I know he might not be able to control it or whatever, but it just seemed like the way he handled it. And just from an outsider point of view, it looks like he kind of, you know, usually when people miss weight, they're like, sorry. I fucked up or I'm hurt or whatever. I need the money or whatever. And he was like, oh, that's not that bad. That's literally what he said. He's almost 8 pounds over. That's not that bad. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. I'm glad he's staying on the card because a lot of fans were like, get him off the card. Don't give him any money. But I'm glad. I mean, listen, I want to see the guy fight. I'm not against him. I mean, he's still a fantastic fighter. And right. He's got to fight. He's got to fight with a guy that he fought backstage for free. So now we get to see it, you know, tomorrow night, which is great.
Well, guys, the fight that I'm most excited for, the fight that I wanted to happen, I predict these things. This is the fight that I dreamed into existence. That's enough Conor McGregor quotes for this intro. Tony Ferguson versus Nate Diaz. Tony Ferguson, a -120 clip versus Nate Diaz, +100. This line has had some significant movement since I sent you guys the screenshot an hour and a half ago. Yeah. Ferguson, 25-7 overall. Diaz, 20-13 overall. Ferguson has only had 12 non-UFC fights. Nate Diaz has only had 7 non-UFC fights. Ferguson began his career in 2008. Diaz began his career in 2004. Two absolute legends of the game. Kenny, I'm sure you can go back in the archives of your mind and picture yourself back in 2004 and 2008, a young spry, young buck, Kenny Florian, never missing weight, finishing fights.
Never miss weight, finish fights.
Rolling through with that model hair. Neither fighter's won since 2019. Pettis for Diaz and Cerrone for Ferguson. Fellas, nobody's coming on here to listen to me intro this fight. BP, we're going to start with you, and we're going to let the legend go last. Tony Ferguson, -120, Nate Diaz, +100. Where are you leaning?
Man, I tell you what, this is one of the tougher fights I've had to pick. I wish I would have had a little more time, but that ain't the fucking game. The game is let's get these picks out, and I love it. I live for this shit. Listen, I was on Tony over the Leech. You know, that was a great number at +255. Thought Tony was going to come in, wrestle a little bit. He looks pretty good at 170. He looks pretty filled out. Like, when he cuts this 55, he's really sunken in. Like, it's very defined. He looks healthy. He looks good. You know, he's got his hair gold, and he's ready to go. And then you got Nate Diaz, who obviously was training for Chimaev, so he's obviously been working ground game, working boxing. I mean, has Nate Diaz ever get tired? He never gets tired, right? So this is, I think, going to play out everywhere. I think this is going to be crazy nuts everywhere. There's going to be blood. If there's a bet on DraftKings Sportsbook, will these guys bleed? And if it's -8 million, hammer it, because these guys are gonna bleed. And
they bleed just walking into the octagon,
exactly,
to be honest.
The cut, yeah, man, when he puts Vaseline, Nate starts bleeding. Like, oh shit, it's fucking fantastic. I love these. And we've all talked about it. We would obviously love this fight to happen sooner, but that's not the reality. The reality is we get them. They're both in their late 30s. They're both war-torn veterans, and we both respect the fuck out of them. And I'm respectful that they took this fight. And they respect for each other the weigh-ins. I thought there might have been a little some tense stuff. They shook hands. It was very nice. But they're not going to shake hands tomorrow night. There's going to be some middle fingers. There's going to be some weird Imanari rolls. There's going to be some shit going on tomorrow night, and I'm excited for it. But I gave out Tony, and I feel like my guy Flo gave out Diaz, right? No, he gave out Diaz, and I feel like he might lean Diaz. I love Diaz at +100. I'm not going to lie. And this line is moving. When I got it, it was even. Now it's plus money. But I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to say Tony Ferguson in an all-out war, an all-out decision. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be close. It's going to be a whole hell of a lot of fun. But I feel like Tony, it has a little more left. And I feel like Nate, even though this is his last fight and he's always a warrior, he's always a G, and we all love Nate Diaz, I'm just going to lean Tony here. And the floor is yours, Flo. But yeah, I like Tony Ferguson just by a little bit in this fight.
And it's going to be 5 rounds. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Just making sure. That's interesting. All right. Because, you know, Ferguson wasn't preparing for 5 rounds. Nate Diaz was. Nate Diaz has been fighting at 170 pounds for a long time now. He's big. People don't realize when you go up to Nate Diaz and you see how big he is, it typically surprises everybody. Tony Ferguson, not a small lightweight either. But he hasn't quite packed in or filled into the welterweight division just yet, where I think Nate Diaz definitely has, and has for a little while. These two are so similar. Like, there are very few Tony Fergusons and very few Nate Diaz, but you look at them, they're so similar. The way that they fight, the drama, the chaos that they both create, the blood, as you mentioned, BP, that they bring into the octagon when they fight. Tony Ferguson has more of a variety of weapons. You know, he'll throw elbows. He'll spin into stuff. He'll do Imanari rolls. Nate Diaz, more rice and beans, more solid fundamentals when it comes to grappling, when it comes to striking, in my opinion. Doesn't throw as many kicks, though, as I would like to see Nate Diaz throw. Maybe it changes for this one, but I don't think so. Both men love to come forward. Both men know how to adapt and come back in fights. For me, you know, both men have about the same experience. I think Ferguson has like 33 fights. Nate Diaz has like 34. The big thing for me is Nate Diaz's experience at welterweight at this stage of their careers. Tony Ferguson moving back up from lightweight. I think he'll have a lot of energy early on. But I think that Nate is going to be able to take Tony Ferguson's shots a little bit better than Tony's going to be able to take his. Yeah. So I think the experience of that in that weight class, and I think the size is going to matter in this one. Tony Ferguson's best bet is to try to get those bows going and to try to get a lot of low kicks, whether it's to the calf or to the lead leg from the southpaw stance of Nate Diaz, to try to slow him down. And he's got to fight smart. He's got to go in and out. That's the way you beat Diaz. You beat him with discipline. You beat him with footwork. You beat him with his ability to kind of, you know, stay flat-footed while you move around the cage laterally, all that stuff. Tony possesses that ability, I think, but he can't help himself if it becomes a fight. He just can't. That's the way he's built. He's going to move forward, and he can still win that fight. I just think that's going to favor the larger man here and the guy who's been at welterweight a little bit longer. And I know Tony Ferguson has a history of fighting at welterweight as well, right, from the Ultimate Fighter, all that stuff. But he has made his name from that amazing streak fighting at lightweight, and he's fought some of the best in the world in the lightweight class. He's had some tough losses recently. Nate has as well, you know, the last few fights. So I love this fight. This fight makes so much sense for me. Both guys deserve all the respect in the world. Love the way that these guys fight. I just like Nate Diaz here. Does it go to a finish? I'm not sure, but if it goes five rounds, guys, this is going to be another classic fight. I mean, this is just a no-brainer, and well done to the UFC for making it happen. And to these guys for accepting.
And a point I want to make that Kenny made that's going to completely contradict what I said. Nate's been training at 170 for five rounds. Tony took this fight on relatively short notice, up a weight, which he hasn't fought in a while, and he's going five rounds. Now, Tony's one of those wired different kind of guys. I think he eats five rounds for breakfast, but that's still when you're a high level guy against a bigger man, you know, that plus number with what Kenny just said is very interesting. But I'm still gonna rock with El Kukui. I'm still rock with my guy. I'm not gonna jump ship, but Kenny made some really good points there.
Well, and something he did say in the press conference leading up to that, the press conferences that actually happened, was that he started sparring again for this camp. He hasn't sparred in like 5 or 6 years. I'm pretty sure he wasn't sparring for a five round fight. So
that's true.
You know, that's a fact. If you're, you know, and Kenny could speak to this better than I can, but if you're mentally going in there with a game plan that you've drilled and prepared for those three rounds, and you have to extrapolate that over a 25 minute fight, I feel like that's a little bit of a different ask strategically.
It is. The whole camp is different if you're preparing for five rounds, in my opinion, and in my experience. Could I have gone five rounds? Sure. But for me, it's the mental component of knowing that you have prepared for five rounds, you know, and typically for three round fights, I would do five rounders anyway, but, you know, maybe six rounds. But it's just the consistency from your strength and conditioning to your boxing rounds, to your MMA rounds, to your kickboxing rounds, to your shootboxing rounds. All of that revolves around going five hard rounds, not three hard rounds. And getting that switch up mentally is very different for a fighter, in my experience. So, but Tony is very strong mentally, and this dude really doesn't get tired. So he's got that going for
him. Buffalo on the beat. I'm going to go ahead and call you out right here. Yes, this could definitely end in a draw. That would be exciting because then Nate's gone and we're going to be craving for a rematch. And, you know, 5,000. Hey, put a tenner on it. What's that? Put a cup of coffee on it. You ain't gonna miss that money. But Kenny, I want to ask you what you were mentioning. When you did five round camps, Did you do longer camps or just do more in the set time, like 8 to 6 weeks, whatever your camp was?
I would do, it was both. It was okay. Longer. Yeah, it was both. So I would do a longer camp. In some ways I would kind of, build a stronger foundation and then kind of go into,
gotcha.
You know, yeah. The 5-round preparation more specifically. So my strength conditioning was way more intense. You know, just the training and the management of all that was very different. It's just different. And you did the work, you know what I mean? Sure. And I think being unsettled with that heading into a 5-round fight could mess with certain guys. I think it probably would have messed with me knowing that, man, am I 100% prepared for right. this? I don't know. But Tony Ferguson is a different cat, dude. He yeah. thinks different. He moves different. He does yeah. everything differently. So I'm curious to see what his approach is going to be here against Nate Diaz. Does he start slow? Can he afford to start slow? Does he right. start fast and try to take Nate Diaz out like from the get-go? It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, Tony's 38 years old and thinks he can make a major league team pitching. So this guy's different.
You is, know what I mean?
That's a hard thing to do.
And look how he approached the fight that you called, Kenny, the Lando Venata fight. You know, it's
right.
you know, he kind of went out there with more of a reckless abandon and had to reel that back, you know, because he realized yep. like this is a real fight now. So yeah. it'll be interesting yep. to see what Tony shows up. And my question to you guys, and Kenny, I'll start with you and then we can get on out of here. But who has the most to lose in this fight now? Because, mm-hmm. you know, does Tony buy himself another loss in the UFC, you know, stepping up on short notice like this? You know, does he get a bit of a Sam Alvey treatment? And then for Nate, you know, a loss against Tony Ferguson, does that hurt him worse than a loss against Chimaev?
I would say on a card of this kind of magnitude, I think that Tony Ferguson is doing the UFC a big favor, and losing, even if he loses quickly, I still think he's going to be just fine. And again, given what he did at 155 pounds, the fact that this is a short, you know, notice fight, he's doing them a big favor. He will be just fine. So I don't think he has much to lose here. I also think this is a fight that he's wanted for a very long time, for a couple of reasons. You know, anytime you fight a Diaz brother at this stage of the game, it's going to mean more money down the line. And it's the opportunity of a lifetime to beat one of those guys and then elevate yourself. Like, this is what Nate did against Conor, right? His life was never the same after that. He is one of the biggest stars in the UFC for that reason. And the way that he delivers fight, Tony Ferguson is that same dude. So he's got nothing to lose here. I don't know. I think this kind of favors Nate Diaz in a way, really, because I think this is a fight that he would prefer. I don't think he's going to be as concerned with the takedown and stalling. There's not going to be a whole lot of stalling when you fight someone like Tony Ferguson. I think Nate Diaz is probably the better grappler. I know Tony is dangerous on the ground as well. I just think Nate's probably the cleaner, more experienced grappler. Yeah. In my opinion, he's longer limbs too. He's bigger. You know, Nate is very slick. It's his foundations that I think are so solid, which is going to be the difference here. Tony Ferguson, more dangerous in sniping with his submission attacks, but I think Nate Diaz is the better grappler. Tony has more weapons on the feet, though. He's going to have to use them, and he's going to have to be smart at getting in and getting out. So he can't fall for those traps up against the cage and getting caught there, because Nate will attack the body, slow you down, and touch you with that jab. So, it's going to be a fascinating fight. Those are my thoughts. BP, I don't know what you think.
Yeah, so I don't really think there's going to be a loser. I hate to be the asshole that can't answer your question, but I think Tony has more to win. So if Tony, because he's going to be in the UFC and he goes, I just beat Nate, I'm on this 4 or 5 fight skid, I took it on short notice, he can really be a champion. If Nate wins or loses, he still has that army. Right. If he goes out and, you know, there's the rumors he's going to box Jake Paul, that's still going to be massive. Like, Nate's the type of guy who's on that Conor level where even if he loses, he's still going to be big. I mean, look at the Leon Edwards fight. People only remember that one punch. Nate was getting smoked up until that one punch. You know what I mean? And the Masvidal fight, the BMF belt, Nate, I mean, it was kind of competitive, but not really. And people still, it doesn't matter. Like, Nate has 13 losses. Like, people don't care. So I don't think either have much to lose. I just think Tony has more to win. And especially since he's sticking around and getting that, doing a favor for the UFC and getting a big shine and having a Diaz on your resume, even if Nate does have 13 losses, that's still a really nice name on your resume for sure.
Boys, I'm excited. And we know with all the drama that's happened this week, there's been a certain Irishman that's been a little quiet on social media. Yeah. So I guarantee that we get a little bit of interest from...
He's busy on his boat. You know what I mean? He's busy on his boat.
He's definitely busy on that boat. That's
one of his boats. Yeah.
One of his boats. I'm surprised. The one thing I will say about Conor McGregor, like, I had a lot of theories going around that Chimaev thinks he's the man. He's the main event. They're not going to cancel this. I'm the guy, so I can miss weight. Conor McGregor is the biggest star this sport has ever seen, and he's never missed weight. That guy comes in, you know, 155, championship weight, 170, whatever.
Injured or not.
Injured or not, right? So I know we want to throw darts at Conor. I'm a Conor guy. He comes in, and he could be like a Costa or even, a, you know, assuming a Chimaev and be like, well, I'm not going to make weight. Fuck that. Let's do it at 165. Let's do it whatever. I'm not cutting to 55. He's never done that, and he has the leverage to do that. So, you know, Conor's a professional, even if he's, you know, 45 minutes late for the weigh-ins and the press conference, he's going to be on time, or he's going to be on weight. So I wanted to give the Conor shout out there. Cause I love the guy.
No, well, I think we're all Conor fans, right? Oh, yeah. 50 G's, Kenny.
50 Kenny, baby.
Well, I mean, I think that's the most interesting scenario, right? Nate wins. Yeah. It sets up a potential Conor fight. That's really the only scenario that'll keep Nate around in the UFC, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You have Conor McGregor Sports and Entertainment.
Right.
Conor is not, I guess he's out of the testing pool right now.
No.
Nate started his own promotion and Conor's got his own. Yeah. Maybe they're like, hey, why don't we just keep all the money to ourselves? So who knows what's going to happen. So it might be them staying in the UFC, but it also might be them doing their own thing too. So
right. Hey, if I come with you, Kenny, and say, hey, we're going to get $100, but we're going to pay 40 out to some random dude.
Right.
We're like, why don't we just split the 50?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's do it.
Right. What are we doing? By the way, that call, Kenny, I've never told you this before, because I don't want to fanboy too much since we're on a podcast together, but your Conor call over Marcus Brimage is one of my all-time favorites.
Ah, thanks,
this is why everyone's talking about him. I love Conor McGregor. Because when he came to the UFC, it was in Sweden. It was a day card for us here in the States. Yeah. And I remember knowing about him, like double champ. I knew him, you know. I follow Cage Warriors, and then I was like, and Marcus Brimage, you know, he came from the Ultimate Fighter or whatever, but you called that perfect, bro. I love that. That was good.
Thanks, man. Yeah. That was fun.
Well, fellas, this was a lot of fun. So I appreciate you guys getting on last minute, you know, very last minute for the entire promotion, for the entire fan base. And I'm sure everyone watching appreciates it, over 1,000 strong here. On behalf of the Anakin Florian podcast, on behalf of John Anakin in his hotel room buried in scripts right now, I'm Cody Merrill. On behalf of Brian Petrie, on behalf of Kenny Florian, subscribe to the Anakin Florian podcast. Check out our website. Check us out on Fight Pass for the Anakin Florian Fight Pass Rewind. Go download the DraftKings Sportsbook app from John's profile. And fellas, that's it for me. Don't text and drive. You'll later.
That's right.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.